This is Health Dose, a conversational podcast from My Michigan Health focusing on different issues related to your health. Every June, Pride Month festivities take place across the nation. While it's a time for celebration, it's also a great time to raise awareness. While many LGBTQ plus youth thrive during adolescence, stigma, discrimination, and other factors put them at increased risk for negative health and life outcomes. Joining us today to discuss health disparities among LGBTQ plus youth is Dr. Craig Weeks, a family care physician specializing in HIV and hepatitis prevention, especially among LGBTQ plus youth. And so Dr. Weeks, let's just start today discussing some of those health disparities in the LGBTQ plus community.
Thanks for having me on. Certainly an important topic to discuss, especially in June. So happy Pride, everyone. Definitely among the LGBTQ population, sometimes I may say the queer community. It's a little bit easier catch-all term. So no longer offensive, though not everyone necessarily wants to be called queer. And so use appropriate terms to identify people in their community. Definitely there are several health disparities that this community is faced with relative to people who would identify as heterosexual peers. Probably the best study of this, the CDC does a youth risk behavior survey that they conduct on school-age children, generally focusing on those in grades 9 to 12, that focuses strongly on all youth in schools and the disparities that they all face. This specifically has started collecting data on adolescents who identify as heterosexual or members of the LGBTQ plus community, or those who identify, and then also based on their sexual behavior, which is either with heterosexual partners or any same-sex interaction. So it gives us some good discussion about different kinds of disparities faced in this community. Probably one of the first ones that comes up are mental health conditions that some of these youth face. I think it's important to realize that LGBTQ youth are by and large healthy, high-functioning young adults and become high-functioning adults later in life, though they do face different stigmatization. Their identity as an LGBTQ youth is not what causes the mental health conditions. It's the fact of the disparities that they're facing. So this could be bullying. This could be other kinds of interactions they have with youth and peers that lead to some of these mental health conditions. Probably the most common thing that people have is persistent feelings of depression or hopelessness, which really affect this community. They experience those at much higher rates relative to their peers. The data from that CDC study do show that nearly 70% of LGBTQ plus students experience feelings of sadness or hopelessness compared with 35% of heterosexual counterparts. So there are huge disparities between heterosexual identifying students and those who identify as part of the queer community. And then this translates into concerns about suicidality and other thoughts of self-harm. And so those same data show that almost 50% of LGBTQ plus identifying students seriously considered attempting suicide in the past year compared to 15% in the heterosexual population. So huge disparities. And while these disparities exist for heterosexual and LGBTQ plus students, they also are more emphasized in other underserved populations, specifically Black and transgender populations.
Yeah, the mental health side of things for LGBTQ plus community members is one that is unfortunate to see the disparities in compared to some of their heterosexual peers. There's got to be other disparities in other areas too, thinking of, say, violence or STIs. What do you see and what does some of the statistics see in this community?
So there's definitely a huge disparity. Really, it boils down to access to healthcare for a variety of different reasons, whether people have had negative interactions in the past with the healthcare community or don't have access to adequate health resources to access healthcare. These things lead to much higher rates of sexually transmitted infections in this population. While that same CDC study shows that they're about as sexually active as their heterosexual counterparts, there's lower rates of condom use and barrier protection. Many people associate condoms with pregnancy prevention, and so it seems to be more prevalent use in the heterosexual community. In the men who have sex with men community or LGBT community, sometimes pregnancy is not a concern. However, that doesn't remove the fact that condoms help prevent sexually transmitted infections. The Sexually transmitted infections like gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis are noted at much higher rates in the LGBTQ plus community, as well as other sexually transmitted infections like HIV. In my practice, I'm an HIV specialist. I do treat a lot of HIV, and we are routinely testing for sexually transmitted infections in this population, and we see much higher rates of sexually transmitted infections, at least anecdotally, in the population that I treat. Over time, that same CDC study did show that there were lower rates of STI screening that have been going on really for the last probably 5 years. And so lower rates of screening is lower rates of diagnosis, which means lower rates of treatment. As I mentioned, some people don't have adequate access to healthcare resources, which is why they end up not engaging in routine screening or may have lower health literacy and on the importance of condoms and other modalities for STI prevention. As far as violence in the queer community, that is sort of a far-reaching topic that can go all the way from violence in school settings with people being bullied. They have studies that show that the rates of especially electronic bullying with things like social media, Facebook, there's increased risks of violence that steps outside the playground, as it used to be when I was a kid, goes on to the online setting where now that violence can really carry over into people's home lives and continue to cause stress and poor mental health outcomes as a result. That violence can also translate into maybe the adolescent population with sexual violence and physical violence as a result. I often think of someone who is a youth who may identify in the LGBTQ population, and I just kind of monitor what that might look like through their lifetime. If you think of an adolescent who's dealing with their identity, whether that's a sexual or gender identity, and coming to terms with that themselves, and then when they're stepping out into the community, coming out to friends and colleagues, maybe even family, depending on how that's received by family, there are lots of youth who are kicked out of their homes. Those youth may go out onto the streets to be homeless, and they have no resources, they have no housing, and often people are engaging in survival sex to have resources, to have food, maybe even a roof over their head. And so all of these checkpoints are really places where violence can happen, whether that's a youth living independently on the streets without resources, whether that's someone engaging in survival sex and the violence that comes of that, specifically transgender individuals, transgender youth specifically, are at higher risk if they are engaging in these kinds of behaviors for survival. If they're found out, and that can lead to lots of physical violence and leads to significant rates of violence against transgender communities specifically.
Great answer, Doctor. Again, we're joined by Dr. Craig Weeks, a family physician, helping us discuss the health disparities among queer youth. And, you know, we've talked about mental health conditions and STIs and violence. There's certainly some more medically based problems in this community. And so what are some of those that you see disparities in?
Certainly, as I discussed that sometimes this community just has less access to healthcare in general, that obviously has long-term health outcomes for them aside from mental health and other sexual risks that they may encounter. With less health literacy, there's potentially increased risks of things like the common medical conditions that we all face, even if we have access to healthcare. So things like obesity and eating disorders in the community for a variety of reasons can sometimes have higher risks. Routine screening for health conditions like cancers often are higher risk. Specifically, lots of studies show that women who identify as lesbian have lower rates of cervical cancer screening. Sometimes people associate certain sexual behaviors with risks of sexually transmitted infections, and specifically, cervical cancer has much higher risks in lesbian women. Further, things like preventive care, like HPV vaccinations, which can prevent cervical cancer and genital warts, are much more prevalent in communities that aren't receiving those vaccinations, which are people who are not regularly accessing healthcare routinely.
So for someone like yourself that's living in this space every day, helping treat LGBTQ plus health problems, what are folks like you and healthcare professionals elsewhere doing to address some of these disparities we've been talking about?
I think first and foremost, the important thing is to do what we're trained to do, is to talk to people and interacting with our patients, approaching them with no assumptions, making sure we're asking them questions, not to be gossipy, not to find more information about their private life, but to find out what their risks are and address those directly. That not only gets you direct information, but it opens a conversation. It creates a space of comfort where people know that they're accepted and they can speak openly and freely about the things that go on in their life and how that affects their health. And our goal is to make people healthier and live long, healthy, fulfilling lives. The more direct conversations we can have with our patients, the better we can help them achieve that goal. There are lots of opportunities for education that providers can reach out for. When I did my residency training in Midland at the hospital in Midland, I did a elective rotation down at the University of Michigan Transgender Services Center to get more information about working with this population. And I had access to providers who specialize in this and do this day in and day out. And that really created a foundation for how to talk to people and use affirming language and really created the foundation for me working with this population. After residency, I did a fellowship in community HIV and viral hepatitis at the University of Massachusetts in Worcester, Massachusetts. Part of that included quite a bit of transgender care. There's disproportionate effect of HIV on the transgender community. And so it comes with the same territory that we're working with those people and often doing hormone therapy and treatment for them to engage them and keep them in care for their HIV. I also did additional training while out there with Fenway Health, which is one of the country's leading LGBTQ education facilities. They have the National LGBTQ Health Education Center, which has lots and lots of online CME opportunities for providers looking for that. They also have every 6 months, they have a one-week seminar that is virtual that is completely regarding trans care and how to integrate that into your routine practice for all members, including social workers and other community health workers and people who work directly with patients. These are all opportunities that people can access to learn more about caring for this population. I think, again, the most important thing is that people talk to the person sitting in front of them and have real conversations so you can engage them in their care, retain them in care, and create that space where they feel comfortable.
So you start to address some of the resources available to the queer community right there. What are some other resources that are available to folks locally and nationwide?
On a national level, there are lots of different resources, whether it's websites or hotlines that people can call. These can be just for general information. They can also be for people who are in crisis. Probably the first one that comes to mind is the Trevor Project, which has been around for years now. That is specifically geared toward queer youth who are having mental health crises or possible suicidal ideation or threats or thoughts of self-harm. They can access people 24/7 from that hotline and get support. They can access them to local resources and then also help engage them in ongoing counseling and link them to other resources in the community. The other main resource that I think of is the Transgender Lifeline, which is specifically geared toward trans people of all ages, but specifically trans youth. The hotline is staffed by trans people who are able to talk to trans youth about the things that trans people are experiencing. And so that visibility and that identity is really important for people to feel that somebody who actually understands their struggle. You can be supportive, but maybe not be in their shoes. This is resources geared toward the population provided from within that community, which is very important. Locally, there are some organizations. The one that I think of is the one that sponsors our regional Pride event is Great Lakes Bay Pride, is an organization that provides ongoing resources for the queer community throughout the year, but also supports the Pride event that happens every year.
Again, a special thank you to Dr. Craig Weeks on this edition of Health Dose, a podcast from My Michigan Health focusing on different issues related to your health. As always, if you have health concerns, you should check in with your primary care provider. If you need help finding a primary care provider, go to mymichigan.org/doctors.